Ladies and gentlemen, I beg your pardon. We've tried to get this pushed out as much as possible. There will probably be a lot of people pushing in shortly. We have a gentleman from the Central Intelligence Agency who was here yesterday. He is the Director of Information Operations Policy with the Requirements, Plans, and Policy Office. What that means in non-Fed speak is he's the guy who puts the computer viruses in the printers that turn off the Iraqi self-defense system. What he is here to do today is to answer any and all questions that you may have as it relates to government service, et cetera, et cetera. Anything from, did the CIA kill Kennedy? Answer, no, it was the NSA. To, no worries. To, what is Echelon? How does it work? Why should I be afraid of it? To, what is carnivore, et cetera, et cetera. We do ask that you please do not take by the way, the lockpicking demonstration and class will be pushed back to later today, and we'll update that time when we have that available. I'm very surprised that a federal agent would climb over chairs to get to the good seats. That's a hint, folks. There's a Fed in the audience. Actually, from the FBI. There's more than one, but one of them was climbing over chairs. Very important, we ask a couple of things, one of which is that you do not, Chris, take pictures. Thank you. We ask that you do not take the gentleman's picture for security reasons. Are any of you familiar with a gentleman by the name of Mr. Buckley? Buckley was a gentleman in Beirut who was a CIA station chief whose body was found in pieces at the Beirut airport. We do ask that you do not, for the gentleman's safety and the safety of his family, because federal agents have families too, they don't just grow them in laboratories, that you do not take his picture. We also ask that if you ask a question that he cannot answer, and he says, I'm sorry, I can't answer that, don't push him. You're whining if the guy can go through interrogation school, so on and so forth, isn't going to help, and it's just going to piss him off. And he's going to take your photograph and hunt you down. So please be polite, please be respectful. And with that, Captain, are you ready? I think he's signing autographs right now. By the way, you can't see it, I'm going to hold it up. A gentleman friend of mine gave me a nice NSA pin. NSA obviously being the National Security Agency, the folks who do our crypto stuff. On the package, it says made in China. Made in China. You got to love that. Super secret government agency you couldn't even mention 5 years ago has their stuff outsourced to China. Are you ready? Whenever you're ready. I will let him introduce himself and give you a bit of his background. And y'all have a good time.
Well, this was better yesterday when I had a place to sit, but that's okay.
We bulletproofed the lectern for you. Huh? We bulletproofed the lectern for you.
This would be good. All right. Okay, I'll give you an introduction as to who I am and set some ground rules. Number one ground rule, no pictures at all, okay? This is a courtesy that I ask of you. I can't obviously prohibit people or prevent you physically from taking photos. I really don't want it done. I mean, there's a lot of nuts in the world who would just love to go and bag somebody who works for an intel agency. I don't need that kind of trouble. Which is louder, this one?
Yeah. Or,
okay. My name's Jake Schaffner. I'm a captain in the United States Navy. I'm not really a career professional intelligence officer. I'm what we call a surface line officer. I drive ships for a living. I started out years ago as a graduate of the University of Texas at Austin in a technical degree, geography. And then the Navy made me do a bunch of things, as the military services are wont to do. You have a couple of changes in career. I've been a ship's navigator, ship's communications officer, foreign exchange with the German Navy, a couple of tours as engineer, executive officer, command at sea. I have a master's in space operations. I'm a board-certified specialist in the design and construction of reconnaissance satellites and the operations of them. Now, I'm here talking. I kind of got a hair up yesterday after the first couple of daiquiris of the day, and I wasn't satisfied with one of the earlier panel discussions.
So,
Yeah, well, you know, my liver is my problem. So where was I? Oh, yeah, back in 94, I started in information warfare working on the joint staff. I worked in a division called Special Technical Operations, worked a couple of years there, and now I work on the staff of the Director of Central Intelligence. I'm the senior policy drafter for essentially computer espionage and use of computers and intelligence support functions. That's my job. I have a small staff that works for me, and each of the agencies, in turn, when they go up for final legal vetting on their policies and stuff, they come through my office for check. I sometimes provide advice and assistance to the Security Council, I don't know, a variety of different organizations, I have conversations with cooperating foreign intelligence services, and all that sort of stuff. Anyway, I am a career bureaucrat, okay? I am a member of that nameless, faceless government intelligence community that you all have heard so much about in various circles. The general request I have of you today are the following. If you're going to quote me, at least be courteous enough to do it accurately, okay? If I screw up in public, you know, make sure you get the words exactly accurate, and please don't try to make them up, all right? Another thing is, I do not want to know anybody's name that I'm having a conversation with, okay? The rules for us in my line of business are very, very specific. I'm not allowed to collect people's names, addresses, or anything else if you're a U.S. person, unless you want to give them to me because you want to get on my Christmas card mailing list or some sort of personal relationship thing. We don't collect data on U.S. citizens. You may not believe that, but that's the truth of the matter, and we're not allowed to have that data. Other than that, we're going to open it up to questions. I'm not going to sit here and lecture to you or give you a prepared discourse. We're going to start, and we're just going to go around until Priest tells me we're out of time. All right? And you were the first guy with the hand up. What do you want to know? Oh, okay. I'm not going to unzip and bear all the nation's secrets up here, okay? You know, one hates to admit that, but I'm just not going to do it. Yeah, ask is fine. Yeah, the best of my knowledge, and I have some pretty extensive stuff, we've never executed a successful computer network attack. Oh, this guy wanted to know what were all of our offensive information warfare capabilities and when have we actually used them. Okay. First off, I don't know what definition of information warfare you're coming from. I mean, that's not a small statement. In our government, we use a definition of information warfare that includes things like deception, psychological operations, hiding data. And it's not just about computers. In fact, computers are a fairly small piece of what we consider our information warfare line of business. And so you can say that we use it a lot. Jamming over Kosovo, jamming in support of air operations. You know, I'm not going to lie to you. We use various computer-based techniques to perform intelligence collection. Okay, I mean, it's a logical thing to do. We've never executed a computer attack against anybody. And the reason we haven't is we're not sure at the national level if it's possible to contain an attack appropriately. For those of you who like to dabble in development of offensive computer techniques, you're sort of at the leisure of not having to worry about consequence management. Okay? we have a different set of criteria in the government. Okay? They're called the laws of war. All right? And if we unleash an attack against someone, we have to be able to justify it under Article 52 of the United Nations Charter, and we also have to be able to prove that we just whacked the guy we wanted to whack and not, you know, thousands of ancillary other people, okay? That's kind of hard to put a good model or simulation together of that in the computer business before you go ahead and do it, okay? Now, does that answer the question? Yeah, that's about as good as I'm going to be able to get for you for right now. You were next, I think. Go ahead. Speak up, can you, for the rest of the audience? You know, I can kind of hear you, but...
Yeah, you said a lot about what they
Yeah. And that's not true, okay? Yeah, there are a lot of watchers. I spend hundreds of man hours a year in direct conversation with congressional staff people. That's a legislative branch of the government, and they don't have to follow the rules that we set up in our office. They got elected. I mean, the congressmen and senators are elected by you. If you're clever enough to participate in the electoral process, this is how you get to influence things. Their staff can call us up, like the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence or the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence can call me up and say, stand by. We're going to come by for a visit. We have, you know, there's nothing you can say about that. They'll show up. They'll ask any question they want. And if we don't answer the mail, we're out of a job or worse things can happen. So this idea about there's no oversight on the intelligence side of the House is not entirely true. They can go investigate or in fact, frequently do visit collection facilities, computer processing centers, records vaults, the training facilities where we train agents, construction halls where we build things. They go to all these sites whenever they feel like it and ask any questions that they want. Because every year they've got us by the manly parts because they're the ones who provide the money. And if we don't answer the mail, to their satisfaction, no dollars, no program. That's as simple as it gets. All right? What about Echelon? Yeah, sure, it's been in the press. What do you want to know? What? Oh, okay, you're running under the assumption that what you read in the press is actually the truth. No, I'm not trying to get on your case here, but a lot of that stuff that got published out by Mr. Campbell, starting off on the reports, and a lot of stuff that shows up in a lot of press about Echelon, ain't so. You know, I got asked this question yesterday. Who was here yesterday? Oh, I'm so sorry, but you're going to hear part of this again, okay? What I would ask any reasonable individual in the audience to do is sit down and think out this stuff about Echelon. It starts with a piece of truth, all right? At one time, the National Security Agency had a small development project that was called Echelon. We also have projects that are called Rosebud, you know, Creek Ivy, Decathlon. I mean, we have endless lists of code names that we put on top of things, you know, sometimes just to confuse ourselves, you know, but they're out there. But there was a program at one time from the National Security Agency, and I can't remember what it dealt with, but it was called Echelon, and that got into records. You know, and the man was very clever, and he strung a bunch of things together, and now we have this picture that says that we monitor everything everywhere. Bullshit. I mean, think about this, okay? Think about the sheer volume of data generated by all the telephone calls in the world, all the faxes in the world, all that other stuff in the world, and we're supposed to have the ability as bureaucrats to be able to process all of it, screen all of it, and somehow put it in bins, and we have enough government employees to read all the important stuff. No, there isn't enough money in the National Treasury for that kind of thing. Actually, we had a hell of a fine time on Jam Echelon Day. It was one of the biggest parties. You know, we just sat around and we're kind of like hoping that things would crash, you know, just to see if it would actually work. And it was bullshit. It didn't work. So it doesn't exist. Sure, there are pattern recognition algorithms. There are limited voice recognition algorithms. There are algorithms that are used to screen digital data. Think about how much computational power it would require to monitor all that stuff. Now go back and do your engineering background And I would love, in fact, all of us in the community would love to have someone walk in with a no-fooling engineering solution that would allow us to do this. It ain't there. You know, trust me, we've thought about it, okay? But haven't been able to pull it off. You know, I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to ask you, go back and do your technical homework. But that's not feasible, what gets described to do that. Go ahead. No. No. No, we didn't go against the bank accounts. All right? Why do I say that so sternly? That's the number one thing that long ago we were told we would not go after. Why? The whole banking and financial system relies on one thing. You got to trust it to work. If you take some of your most intimate possessions, your dollars or whatever they may be, and you give them to someone to hold for you and do good things, there's this huge element of trust associated with that. If we ever have a circumstance where money goes in and it don't come out and no one can explain why that happened, the whole thing begins to fall apart. I mean, we can dislike this Milosevic guy all we want, but if we start financial-based attacks against the guy, then we throw into question the actual foundation of national power, which is dollars. It ain't aircraft carriers, okay? We have a real problem with that. So, not against bank accounts. What could happen in digital warfare? I don't know. Imagination's your limit, I suppose. You know, but... I mean, how do you answer that question? I mean... Huh? I don't know the list of all the things that are on prohibited lists, but certainly top of the hit parade is the financial side. And then the second thing would be any form of U.S. person. The laws are very specific in that. And U.S. persons include resident aliens, U.S. corporations, that kind of thing. I mean, after all, we are the U.S. intelligence community, you know. Huh? What about Canada? Oh, man. No. As I recall the terms of the... I'm trying to think of something here. There's a treaty that's in effect between us and a couple other partners that we fought World War II with, which are very, very clear about prohibitions on intelligence collection against friends. And not all friends have the same privileges with us. Canada is a top of the hit parade for special privileges, like no collection at all against Canadians. And we have some very interesting prohibitions on cooperation with allies, too. Like, I can't go to an allied intelligence service and ask them to spy on an American. That's also a prohibition of law. So, you know, you don't get to take that route to walk around things. That's illegal. If somebody from our allied states asked us to come conduct surveillance on their citizens, which is prohibited by their law, then we wouldn't do it. I mean... You got to have some rules, and the rule of law is it's the best one to go with. Can't think any better. All right. Yeah, go ahead.
Did the fall of the Soviet Empire ever, what do you say, or what is actually the focus of the intelligence organizations in the close and far future?
Well, with the fall of the Soviet Union, what are we working on now? Oh, geez, the list is endless. U.S. person, can't do that, sorry. I know you guys really love the Windows operating system, you know, but I'm sorry, we can't, you know, he's not a sovereign country, you can't collect against him. All right, what sort of targets do we work against? We have a top-tier list of nations we consider to be bad actors. I mean, classic cases, you know, North Korea, Iraq, a couple others who like to sponsor terrorism. So, you know, we have some heavy-duty collection against them. We're concerned with terrorist groups. We support offshore counter-narcotics work. Some of those narcotics cartels are pretty violent people, and they get engaged in other things. We do provide some support to international law enforcement activities. And then there's the general watch. I mean, anybody who might be developing weapons of mass destruction, bioweapons, chemical weapons, nuclear weapons, big, bad stuff, we're interested in that. And then just because the Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore, we watch them a lot, too. I mean, after all, if you go down and you do your math, they're the only person that can cause our, only other nation state at the moment that can cause the entire nation state and society of the United States to disappear. I mean, they still have the ordinance and it's still targeted. So you watch that. You know, you get concerned about internal civil unrest in the Soviet Union when they have nuclear weapons. Imagine a country that had potentially a civil war and nukes were loose. Ooh. You know. So we have a long list of things that we still monitor, and every year, you know, that's part of that congressional oversight thing. You know, we get asked, you know, what are you monitoring? What are your priority levels? And we end up going and spending a lot of time on the Hill with the committees, and they review all that stuff. Okay, does that answer your question? In the back, red hair. Huh? Oh, Haven Co. Okay. All right. First off, I'm not actually a CIA employee. In the U.S. intelligence community, there is an organ that's above the CIA. That's a management staff that owns the actual 13 agencies. I'm an officer of that. In the case of Haven Co., I personally read the net a lot about Haven Co., but we have no collection ops against them because it's kind of a curiosity. You know, who doesn't know what Haven Co. represents? Or see, okay, there's this little piece of damp dirt in the northern sea that, for some reason, I've never figured this out, the Brits decided that they don't want to maintain sovereignty over, so they kind of gave it up. And there was this early warning platform that was built on the thing as part of a defense chain during World War II. And this guy and his family moved in and said, well, you know, nobody else wants it, so I'll make a country out of it. You know, and I don't know what the guy's name is. I forget his name, but he's a prince something or other, you know, and he's trying to make arrangements to issue his own, you know, passports and stuff like that. But the big thing, the real hot attraction that this guy wants to get into is a data haven. You send me your data, and I'll hide it here, and because I don't subscribe to these international cooperation treaties, I don't have to share it with anybody else. So it's safe with me. Okay. You know, it's a thing that I'm curious about. You know, as part of the world evolves into the future, we're going to watch that. You know, we'll pay attention to that because we're always interested in information. I mean, we're in the intel business. Our job is to steal information. Okay? I mean, that's what you do, all right? And so wherever it is, we're interested in it, but whether we do anything about it is an entirely different issue. It depends on whether or not you're on this hit parade of people we really care about, you know, like terrorists and nukes and things like that. Yeah, go ahead. You know, speak up. No, I mean, there's too many variables in that equation. For those who didn't hear, the question was, when we see a sample of encryption for the first time, sort of what's a median average figure on how long it takes us to bust the thing? Well, there's no good number for that. I mean, it depends on the algorithm that was employed, how lengthy the sample is. All that kind of thing. In many cases, we'll never decrypt it. It just will never happen. I mean, there was stuff that was used by the KGB during World War II and in the years immediately after that, the old Venona things that provided lists of names of spies they had recruited in the United States. And a lot of that stuff we were never able to break. You know, it's still there in the vaults, and we eventually gave up trying because it was just too hard and was so long ago. There's a lot of stuff that you can buy these days that we can't break. I mean, that's why we put up such a fuss about it in the encryption debates, you know, with Congress and setting the encryption policy and thing. I mean, our job is to get information. And when it's heavily encrypted, life's a bitch. Okay, you know, so. So there's no good answer to that. It depends on how they did it. Did they do it right? How much of it have we got? Is it anything important enough that we really want to pay attention to? Because we don't have unlimited computer firepower to throw at people. You know, and then processors change a lot. It just goes on and on and on. So the answer to that's not real clean. Okay. Somebody. All right. Go ahead. Well, it ain't useful and important to me. Oh, I mean, this carnivore thing, this FBI sniffer thing? Yeah. I know a little bit about the methodology of carnivore. I wouldn't consider it too particularly sophisticated. First off, I'd really like to pop up and hit in the side with a 2x4 the idiot who named it carnivore. I mean, it's kind of a bad choice of words. And there's a lot, the first question you have to ask yourself on a thing like that, if you're a citizen of a democracy, is you hear this press report, you've got this report out there that says, somebody, anybody has installed a listening device, okay? Remember, the damn thing's just a machine. Machines do what they're told. The next series of questions you got to ask is, how is it given instructions and who gives them? Under what circumstances they provide the instructions to the machine? Okay? The carnivore methodology requires court orders plus the active cooperation of some of the installations that you would put it into. You know, I don't know about you, but getting court orders is a pain in the ass. It takes a long time, and you have to have a very clear-cut case in order to get them. So you can't do blanket monitoring. And in fact, that's pretty much the answer back to this echelon-related thing. If you only have a limited amount of computer firepower, you only have a limited number of people, you have to have a general idea where the thing is that you might want to go after, and then you chase it there, okay? Yep. Okay. I don't know much more about it. I really try to avoid, in fact, most intelligence officers try to stay away from things like law enforcement work. Laws require us to render assistance to the FBI if they submit the appropriate request to us and it's been endorsed by a federal court judge. But otherwise, we try to stay away from that stuff. Nothing good ever comes of press reports about, you know, surveillance work, you know. It's just unpleasant, you know. Go ahead. Who's responsible for overhead imagery management, and if there's more than one agency, isn't that a duplication effort? Is that kind of where we're at? Okay, the builder, constructor, owner, operator for the physical infrastructure is the National Reconnaissance Office, whose beautiful five-building headquarters complex you can find in Northern Virginia. When I first worked with them years ago, it was against the law for me to say the letters NRO in that order. I could have been prosecuted. They've come out of the box a lot. The folks who actually do the picture development, analyze the pictures, ship them around to the customer base and all that kind of thing. It's the National Imagery and Mapping Agency. And that's it. So there's a split in function there. Yeah, go ahead. Microscopic flying agents? Oh, are we talking about nanotechnology? Oh. Huh. Yeah, I've heard. Yeah, some of the offices I deal with are interested in that, but we haven't. I mean, as far as I know, the labs haven't been very successful in development of this stuff, so we don't have any systems like that. I mean, I think we're a few years out from having the capability of doing a thing like that. I really can't think offhand who manages the research and development for that. I know a lot of it's done in the energy laboratories as part of pure science, some basic robotics work. And then some of the there are some firms who spend their own independent IR&D monies for it, but we don't have any of that kind of thing. It'd be cool if we did, but we don't. Go ahead. Do I see a need for an organization, a military organization, to engage in cyber warfare? A national level organization. The military is developing some cyber warfare specialty organizations. I mean, you can read in reports, Space Command out in Colorado Springs was assigned a role last October to be sort of a focal point to coordinate our computer network defense efforts. And on 1 October this year, they're going to become responsible for coordinating computer network attack efforts. And that's actually some fairly preliminary stuff. I can't imagine, I can't see a circumstance in my mind where the United States would want to conduct a computer network attack if it wasn't in the context of a authorized Title 10 military action. So I don't see why you'd want to do it outside of military channels. The oversight's pretty strict there. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. No, that's wrong too, but go ahead. Oh, that's a good question. We don't know the answer to that. I mean, first off, I mean, your power systems, water systems, all that infrastructure stuff doesn't belong to the government, so you can't just step in and start giving orders to companies and telling them what to do. Huh? Yeah, so? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'll be blunt. You know, I sit as an advisor to the highest levels of this government in discussions of those issues. And we don't know the answer to that because of these issues associated with the government doesn't own a lot of the stuff that needs to be protected. And you can't just walk in and tell people how to or mandate to them how to take care of their personal property and stuff. We are in a democracy. Now, there are some different types of things that have worked over the years. For those who don't know it, the telephone companies agreed to help us years ago keep communications running in the event of a nuclear attack. That's a thing called the National Communications System. Government doesn't own it. It pays for some of the upgrades to phone systems to make them harder and more survivable. But it's all managed by the phone companies, and it's a trust or cooperation relationship. We don't have a law that told them to do that. Same thing goes with things like the power industry and financial sectors and stuff. I mean, otherwise you end up in a state-controlled thing, and then it gets really ugly. That's not what I signed on to when I agreed to defend the Constitution. But, no, I mean, let's move on. I will be available all afternoon for a further discussion on that if you'd like, you know, but, you know, let's kind of keep moving around here. All the way in the back. Go ahead. No. I mean, why would it? I mean, Yeah, but we don't have unlimited resources. Just because people use encryption, it doesn't flicker our care meter at all. I mean, actually, you know, a number of us who are, you know, of the mind I am, would encourage you to use encryption. I mean, go ahead, keep your conversations private. I mean, that's your right as a U.S. citizen. Go ahead and do that. If you're going to encrypt your stuff, my personal advice to you would be read the instructions and do it correctly. Okay? Jeez. But just because you use encryption, I don't care. You know, I have to have something else that makes me want to care, or the organizations that work under us want to care about somebody's communications. There has to be some other hint or association on things that make us want to surveil. Okay? Otherwise, we do not have the resources, time, effort, or attention span to go after everybody in the world who would want to use encryption. That's kind of a blind alley. Yeah, go ahead. Are some encryption schemes, what, deliberately sold with backdoors to permit government surveillance? None that I know of. None that I know of. I mean, think about this. You know, you may not like that answer, but here's the thing from the company standpoint, okay? Yeah, well, hold on. What? Well, no, I got to answer this one over here, okay? And then I'll get you, Priest. I won't forget you. The company. I mean, if a company ever got caught doing that by somebody, and you got a hell of a lot of people in this audience and in the other rooms at this convention alone who are pretty damn good cryptographers. They're up in a league with people who work for our agencies. If a firm ever got caught doing that, they would flat be out of business. And how often after that would a company want to cooperate with a government that asked them to do that kind of a boneheaded thing? No, that's not the game plan, okay? Because if you do that, then you lose what you may need for support later on. I may need a company to help me someday if I have a really bad target. I may need their assistance. You know, so you don't set them up to where they're going to get wiped out in public if they get caught doing that kind of thing. That's just bad business. Yeah. You're talking about the Crypto Agay case. Not that I know of. Now, you may have a better source of information, more power to you, but to my knowledge, no. Priest was next. Go ahead. Bullshit. That's, you know, no, seriously, Priest, that's insulting. I mean, I don't know about the rest of you, but, you know, I take my oaths pretty seriously, and most of the people I've ever worked with do, too. That's just an insulting suggestion that you would do that to your own citizenry. If you ever find anyone like that, I would love to be in the audience as we slowly peel off their skin, wrap them in rock salt, and then hang them out as an example of how not to do business. You know, but, no. I feel very strongly about that. I mean, I am as a Navy captain, the equivalent of a colonel, I also carry, in limited circumstances, federal marshal authority. And I take those responsibilities very seriously. They're not lightly exercised. You know? It's bad stuff. I'm sorry. You, right there, blue-green shirt. Economic spying against the United States. No, for the most part, that's not a target for us. The reason is that Congress has some fairly strict rules for the government. We are not allowed to choose winners, okay, as a government. Let's pick the CIA. They don't get to choose a winner, and by that I mean the way it's interpreted by the law is if we conduct surveillance deliberately, to determine whether or not, say, Airbus is going to win out against Boeing in a particular thing, then that's choosing a winner. That's providing an unfair economic advantage to Boeing that, say, Lockheed Martin was not given that kind of privilege. Okay? And there, it's a principle that's not quite as strictly held to as the separation of church and state, but it's pretty damn close. I mean, this is not a state-run economy here, so we don't provide that kind of support to companies. Now, if we're conducting surveillance and we come up with something, you know, because we were on a target, we were sitting on a target, we're collecting data on a target, and we heard stuff about bribery going down, then the standard procedures are we call our congressman. Okay, because that's not in a rule book for us. We don't go directly to the companies. We go to Congress and we ask for what are we going to do about this? Because it's not part of our game plan. Okay, you right there in a gray. Yeah, that's you. It looks like gray from up here. So go ahead. Dumbass thing to do. Clipper chip. Yeah. Oh, man, I tell you, as soon as Clipper was proposed, I know many people were in the CIA at the time, and they just ran for cover. Let's get out of here. We do not want to be around that proposal. I mean, I can understand sort of intellectually why intelligence collection activities would always like to have an easy out on how to get at the data. You know, but it runs into like this commercial viability question the guy asked me. You know, are you ever going to sell stuff with back doors in the crypto? I mean, what happens is you just keep putting people out of business. No one's going to buy that kind of a product. I mean, so why go down that road? We wasted way too much time on that. Okay, I'm not sure how in the end encryption policy will finally settle out, but that was clearly the wrong thing to do, and I don't expect us to go back down that road again. I think we're still recovering from the third-degree burns associated with that. Now, you've had like three of them already. I mean, you know, I got to spread this one out. Are you with the press? Because there'll be a press thing later on. Who else was out there? Blue in the back. No, I've never seen anything, and I probably spend the first 2 hours of every day. I get in about 6 a.m. in the morning, and I spend until 8 o'clock reading reports, cable reports and stuff, and I have hookups to most of the agencies. The data crosses the desk, and I'm sifting through that. I will say this, China, more than any other nation in the world, writes in the open press about information warfare. I mean, if you want to know about anything about information warfare, look for a translation of Chinese recent press stuff. I mean, they write a lot about it. And it's really good stuff, too. I mean, they got some real smart people over there. Cyber war against the United States, I'm not even sure how we would determine that it was happening. Okay? This is a thing that people need to think about. Now I'm going to put in a plug for some of the people out there who like to be hackers or like to screw around with computers a bit. The biggest problem that we have in cyberspace is figuring out who's doing anything. Okay? There are no fingerprints. There's no physical objects out there. We have an event occurred inside a machine or at some data node somewhere, and you don't know who specifically did it. Okay? If you don't know who did it, then you have a hard time figuring out why it was done. And identification and the intent are key elements of international law. If we want to go whack somebody, you know, with a Tomahawk cruise missile or something, you have to be able to make a plausible, provable case that entity X is the one that did it to you. And if you can't determine who they are in cyberspace, then you got a real problem. Now, where the problem comes in for someone like a hacker is, in this environment, an individual conducting a malicious act from on U.S. soil against someone in a foreign nation state could conceivably be interpreted as an agent of the United States government. They wouldn't, but they could look like one. Somebody might interpret them that way. And if that's the case, then you have a situation where actually an individual can cause an international incident. You know, it makes you think about things, okay? Now let's see. We had some others. Right there, black. Code, whatever on your... Code Warrior, go ahead. Yeah. I don't know. You know, as a okay. The question was, well, yesterday I kind of wandered off and was talking about the sad case of affairs where, you know, there's not a whole lot of trust or faith in the government anymore, and it's not getting any better very fast. So, you know, what do you do about that? That's kind of what you're asking me. You know, what are we going to do about that? Well, the only long-term solution for that is the government to get caught in an unbroken string of telling the truth. Duh, okay, you know. That's part of why, you know, I'm standing up here. I'll answer your questions as best I can. You may not like the answers, but they're the ones I know, you know. So, and that's where we are. I mean, you know, a democracy should be skeptical. The citizens in a democracy should be skeptical of the government, okay? I mean, there's a lot of power there. A lot of money goes into it, does a lot of things, influences your life all over the place. You ought to be skeptical about what they want to do, and you ought to act like all those folks from Missouri and say, show me, okay? Show me that XYZ happens, okay? What we would ask that you do is before you start bad-mouthing us in public, you know, do enough research to figure out whether or not someone else answered the question, okay? And like, I get all this stuff all the time about there's no oversight, but I'll tell you, I spend a hell of a lot of my time answering people who wander in whenever they damn well please to ask me questions about my job. I mean, Congress up there takes its job very seriously. And although I've worked with some of those staffers for years, they're not friendly when they show up. Okay, they're here to, I want to see the books and I want to know what you're doing. You know? So yeah, go ahead. You know, use encryption, keep your conversations private. That makes you feel good. Make sure that people answer the question. Okay? You in the back, you had it up a long time. Go ahead. That's a pretty complex one. Let's try to take that in chunks. Anybody who has a vulnerable system, whether it was the government or a private firm or a person, an individual, who, say, was a consultant who worked from their house and had their own security features, anyone who has a vulnerability is going to tell you that they would like you to talk to them before you blow that out somewhere, okay? I mean, it may not sound that way, but it's one of those things that you might want to interpret as common courtesy. Now, having said that, why do we not particularly want vulnerability spread out to the world at large before you get our attention? There's this interesting phenomena that happens about vulnerabilities and postings, all right? We have huge networks associated with the government, tens of thousands of users in some cases, nodes and things. And one hates to admit it, but we're not perfectly organized in the government. And so when we know there's a vulnerability, in many cases it takes us a very long time to ensure that we got all of them plugged up. However, from the time that you post a vulnerability on a wide open bulletin board or someplace where a whole community of people can get to it, to the first hour when they start knocking on your door trying to find out whether or not you're vulnerable, as part of exploiting what just got posted, you can actually measure that in 12 hours or less. There are some code writers who are fast, and I don't know when they ever sleep. because when things get posted to wherever it is, you can bet within about 12 hours the first probe is going to commence. And in some cases, it's going to take us weeks to tighten up the doors. And so, you know, that's part of the argument there. Now, why we should expect you to do everything we want to? Well, I don't personally expect you to do everything I asked you to do. That may be an unreasonable expectation on the part of some government officials. I'm not really sure. A lot of them are like me, you know, old, middle-aged white guys, you know, kind of set in our ways. And maybe that's the way they want it. And they haven't bothered to go out and do any research about how you do it inside your community. It's one of these things that's going to take us a number of years to get all sorted out. You know, I for one, would not get too upset that they asked that. You know, I would, you know, what I would ask is that somebody hold a fairly vigorous debate with them about what the correct way to do it is. I spend a lot of time with the private sector asking how private sector sysads and security people and whatnot do their job because, you know, the government has got no monopoly on bright minds. I find a lot of the best thinking on this stuff to be outside of the government. So I go ask other people who do this, you know. That's not a bad suggestion for some of them who were on the panel yesterday. Is that kind of answer the mail on that question? Yeah, that's about as good as I can do. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to tell you got the perfect answer to this, you know, but I'll try. You right there. Yeah, I mean, we're trying to do that. I mean, it used to be about 2 years ago, if you we had some stats that were collected by people about how long it took to guarantee that everything in one of our particularly large networks was buttoned up. The average success rate was about 5 years, okay? We've gotten that down to what we consider to be an incredibly stellar less than 9 months, okay? And it's because we have a lot of human beings administering a lot of these systems. We don't have a huge population of full-time professional. That's all they do, sysads and system maintainers. Okay, and so in some cases, the folks who need to implement the patches are folks who make rounds every couple of days. They do it as a collateral duty or they do something else. And so as time goes by, we gradually implement automated updating schemes and improve the communications and stuff. But it's going to take us a while. You know, okay, yeah, you. Gulf War printer virus? I've heard about Gulf War viruses against air control systems. I mean, okay, the real answer is no. We did not conduct any successful virus attacks during the Gulf War. None. We attempted, I will say a limited amount about this, okay? We had a target identified that we thought would be very useful to knock out in order to support the air campaign. Okay, that's as much as I want to say about the target. We had a friend that cooperated with us to help us figure out what would be the appropriate software to use against this target. We were prepared to go against this target, and in the complexity of that war, we inadvertently removed the access pathway to the target before we were able to initiate the attack. I mean, you wanted the truth was ugly, there it is, you know what I mean? But you know, but it's a great story. You know, I for one, whenever I see that story repeated in the press, I always love it. Because I sit there and I go, well, at least there's somebody out there who still thinks that we're really good, you know? But it didn't happen. It was a great idea, but it just didn't go down. I'm not doing you right back there.
These recon satellites in which you're board certified.
I won't tell you the smallest that we can see. I earned that. Thank you very much.
Okay.
No, just let me think about this for a second, because we owe the guy the answer, okay? And we're trying to do this trust in government thing, so I got to give you an answer. All right. The one you didn't know was there? No.
Not that small.
I guess the best I can say about that at the moment is we're in the middle of debate about releasing licenses to commercial firms to loft into space and manage full-time imagery collection, commercial imagery collection, at sub 1 meter resolutions. Okay. A meter. Okay. A meter resolution says you can tell the difference between dark blob here separated by about that much space with another dark blob. Okay. You go down to sub millimeter. I think it's half meter resolution is what we're down to releasing commercial licenses for. Okay. And we do better than that. If I were, out here, if you're worried about people peeking in your backyard, with National Reconnaissance System satellites, okay, and somebody wants to ask that question. Now, every audience I've ever been with was always wanting to ask that question. I mean, the first answer is, why would I bother, okay? And the next one is, I wouldn't be worried about it that much. I would start asking questions about why is it that the commercial world keeps wanting to loft imaging satellites? I mean, we don't have very many of them. The ones that are owned by our government, they're very expensive, and we have a limited number of things that we can do with them. But we have people who are coming to us and asking for licensing authorization to put constellations of 40 imagers in space. No, not Microsoft. That's kind of interesting. I'm sorry, do I got to go now? Last question, and all right, go ahead. Am I aware of any attempting to, I'm aware of many countries that have offensive development programs, okay? Do I know that any of them have attacked us? No, and that's not unreasonable. I mean, nobody, no nation state would ever casually just attack for the hell of it and then walk away. I mean, it would have to be associated with some other thing that they wanted to do, okay? There was some negotiation, some gain to be had from that kind of thing. And so it's not surprising to know that people develop these, and it's also not surprising to, we haven't been attacked yet,